Tacky Talk Time. State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy is joining us once again for our weekly update. How are you, Tacky?
Yeah, not too bad, Joe. It's good to see you. Another week, another Tacky Talk.
Yeah, now that, the legislature is coming to the end of its session, right?
Yeah, we shut down on midnight August 1st. So our last day is July 31st for session, and we'll close out midnight August 1st. And this can be the first time we're going to have a normal session since 2018.
Saw you in the Flag Day Parade, by the way. Look good.
Yeah, I saw you. We headset in your laptop doing a live stream. It was great to see folks on Flag Day, and I got a bit more of a tan now. the politician tan, only certain parts of body is exposed to the sun. And but no, it was a great crowd. I was surprised how spry I was actually walking to parade, given the fact I haven't done long walks in a little bit.
Yeah, and nice to honor Quincy Asian Resources too on their 20th anniversary. They had a really beautiful float and a great contingent, and we got free lollipops. So there you go.
Oh, you can't say no to free candy.
That's right. They have done yeoman's work throughout this pandemic. I'm sure folks don't even realize the amount of volunteer effort that has gone into providing food and vaccines and rides to doctors and innumerable public service actions here in the city.
Absolutely, including trying to keep services for seniors and the youth program going. You know, as we all know, the kids, you know, have had a really rough time because of socialization challenges. And youth programs such as Corey's and other risk at youth programs, you know, are crucial. You know, that they've done a really good job on trying to maintain services, maintain these connections. And, you know, one way you do that is things like the float, is like events, you know, and beyond just community service and, you know, having candid conversations together as young folks about what's important in life. But, you know, it's, you know, in-person stuff is still, even if we're still doing this virtually, in-person stuff is still much more engaging and important. Nowadays that we're coming to some new normal of living, you know, we're adapting again to seeing each other and doing it safely.
And I know they're looking forward to an in-person August Moon Festival this year for the first time in a couple of years.
Yeah, I think it'll be the full scale one this time. Last year there was a in-person outdoor, but it was definitely scaled down. Yeah. So it's now that we have the ability to, you know, be outdoors, to know how to do spacing properly. I fully anticipate this be a full scale size event that people used to see.
Yeah. And they're also, folks might not realize, but Corey's very active in the Quincy Public Schools to help with diversity issues. I'm sure be working with a new DEI director that the schools have hired.
No, absolutely. I mean, most people don't realize the school systems are close to a 40%+ non-white, especially at Quincy High School. For some reason, people always look at North Quincy High as kind of the hotbed of people of color, but it actually is Quincy High School. They have greater diversity of different ethnicities, greater diversity of immigrants, a greater diversity of language. While there's a lot of Asian, you know, Chinese and Vietnamese that go to North Quincy High, you know, the UN really is Quincy High School. And the middle school, again, continues to be, all the middle schools continue to have a growing diversity, especially down in the Point and of course in North Quincy as well. So, you know, DEI officer or DEI administrator, I'm not sure what that title is, but, you know, hopefully we'll provide some guidance to the school administration about, you know, where they need to be in the future. You know, I've heard that Weymouth really got ahead of the game years ago. And, you know, as a result, when Black Lives Matter and Asian hate rolled into 2020 and 2021, I mean, they were really ahead of the game in trying to get education out there. Don't shy away from it. Tackle it head on. Engage in hard conversation. You've heard me lament more than once about the importance of having hard conversations.
Yeah, it's the school administration seems to have responded. They've done a little bit of administrative changes. Keith Ford was the principal at North. He is a Black man, and he's been transferred to principal at Quincy High School to start to, you know, show that diversity, I think, within the administration.
Yeah, I've heard positive feedback about Principal Ford at North regarding, you know, how he approaches the students as well as student safety. I think, he will bring a better level of communication in many ways to a much more complex and diverse group, bring a face that, perhaps will provide some more comfort. And I'm not saying that, Principal Tagliari, face it, bring comfort, but, it's about whether students are willing to open up to administrators, and that's ultimately, those are the guys who make the final decision. The teachers, incredibly important to our school system, but the decision-making is administrative level.
Right. And as you know, you were at the student walkout last year. That was one of the key issues of the students, is they weren't feeling that they were being heard.
Yeah, I was actually at the post walkout during the focus group listening session. And I wish I would say I was surprised, but I wasn't. And
yeah.
The listening session was actually coming from parents, not from the teenagers. And I think one of the things the school administration realized is the parents know what's going on because the kids come back and tell them. And it was clear that some people in the focus group didn't feel that the parental intervention on behalf of the children was also heard.
Mm.
So, and some parents, didn't know what was going on. But then again, I mean, it's not like every parent knows every detail in the school. I don't fault people for not knowing what's going on, because if no one tells you, then how do you know, right?
Right.
So there was a great diversity of knowledge based on what's happening in the schools. And I think, a change, we'll see what a change brings. But, I've talked to Principal Ford, and I'm actually pretty impressed about his openness and understanding about the challenges young people face today.
Yeah, I've had a chance to talk with him also. And, his background lends that openness, because he came, basically from a very poor background and worked his way up. Got himself educated, and now is just quite proud to be where he is.
Yeah, he understands the, have to make yourself, you make your own man kind of circumstances. I can definitely relate to that.
Yeah.
And, and it's also not part of the system in many ways. I mean, he comes from outside the system. He comes from a very, how do I put this? He comes from the ability to look from outside the house to look in. So it gives someone else a different perspective of what's going on and bring a different life experience. Well, I do like to hire, folks home. I mean, I do very supportive of local folks. But at the same time, though, we live in our little bubble. And I'm aware of the bubble, believe me.
Yeah.
Sometimes forget that I am part of the political establishment, but I'm also not part of the political establishment at the same time. So I do have that unique perspective of so-called in the house and outside the house look at things.
Hmm.
And, Principal Ford, I think, will provide, a good opportunity for a reevaluation about how things are done. And, and it's a changing face of the school. I mean, we can't treat it like it was in 1970 or 1980 or 1990, even. It's 2022, and you have to change with the times and the changing demographics.
We talk a little bit, Tacky, about the more on the issue of diversity and equity and inclusion, the whole police commissioning process that's underway now that the new law is in effect.
Yeah, there's been some reports and people with the recertification challenges right now. This is one of the concerns I had about police reform when I didn't vote for this. I defied Speaker DeLeo on this one. But let me just say, I think implementation was a real concern, because there was already existing certification training academy we have at our state level that's provided for a state and city. And we have a separate MBTA facility, as you may know, actually on C Street in Quincy, we actually MBTA police training center. So, a lot of the stuff in terms of administratively was changing some names, of different agencies, and also adding more work to some of these agencies regarding these certifications. So now, I wish I would say I was very surprised, but these things do take time to implement.
Mm.
It's not as simply say, let's wipe the books out and start over again. That's, we got to figure out how to integrate the legislature's directives, into existing programming structure. So, you saw in the Globe, there's a bit of a delay. I think it was the Globe, right? There was a bit of a delay. They're going to continue to extend the current situation for a while longer as they kind of sort out their side of it. But I don't think you're going to have like police not working because of this. They'll figure something out. But I wish I was surprised, but I'm really not. It's
yeah.
and we did fund it. People, it's not a funding issue. It's just getting it up to speed. That's all.
Yeah, and some of the police unions are pushing back on some of the recertification questions regarding personal finances, religious beliefs, things like that. So that I think is going to maybe end up in court.
I think you're right on that stuff. I mean, there's a degree of privacy issues that involve, and you know, sharing your pin on what you don't want to share your pin on. But as part of, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion, you know, people have to take a good look at themselves and the rest of the world around them. And I think that's a very hard thing to say when you tell people that. It's like, you know, look at you and look at what's going on around you. Take a real honest look at you, at it, what's going on from a reflective perspective. However, I'm not quite sure what some of this information has to do with recertification. To me, a lot of diversity, inclusion, this issues. I mean, you know, we used to call those things like affirmative action. That's how you know you're old. When you say the word affirmative action, you know, that's really done at a local level, right? I mean, you know, that's the job of a city government. That's the job of, you know, the police department to bring not just diversity, but also, you know, greater understanding on a human resource level among the employees, including police. Know, how to handle the personal issues internally, as well as, you know, again, adapting to the constituency you serve. Mm-hmm. You have to change how you do things, and you have a job, and your opinion is great, but do your job. That's kind of my attitude always. You can have your opinion, but if you're not doing your job because of your opinion, we've got a problem.
Right. And that's not just with police. That's anybody.
Oh yeah. And I don't want to cast aspersions, but I mean, I've heard, and you may as well, watching this, people saying, you know, well, I don't like this part of my job. I only like this part of my job. So I only do the part of the job I like. So you should pay me for the parts I like. I'm like, no, that's not how life works, buddy.
That's right. It's a little reality check. Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard this before from folks, and I look at them like, then don't do this job. Get another job.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm sure doctors don't like the paperwork aspect of their job, but it's a necessity.
Oh, exactly. I mean, people think I enjoy fundraising as part of my political life. No, asking people for money is hard.
Right.
Right. And I've had my share of sunstroke over the years where I get home and lie on the couch and didn't realize there's an ice pack and Gatorade needed. Right. So, you know, and you know, there's some fun parts too. I got to be helpful, as you guys have seen, you know, talking in the past about meeting some very fascinating people, learning about how the world works, learning deep in people's perspective, how the world works, and engaging very, you know, great conversation, whether it be constituents or experts, so to speak, you know, people that work in professions, whether it be a CFO, CEO, PhD, you know, whatever. Engaging a lot of stimulating conversation. Of course, there's the camaraderie of being at the State House with the membership, but also with the staff. You know, some very positive aspects of the job I work, but also, I mean, you know, there is a physical grind, not just a mental grind. And there is, you know, unsavory components of having to campaign regarding, you know, getting money, being the one that I think every single politician will tell you. It is literally the hardest part of this gig is getting campaign dollars. It isn't easy. Sure. So, I mean, you know, my attitude, again, is always the same. You know, not every job is perfect, but if you love the job enough, you know, you're going to put up with it. And the stuff you don't like, and do it well. But I mean, the reward and the other and the stuff that you enjoy, you know, should offset the things you don't like.
Right. Can we talk about some current events, Jackie? The voting rights bill is now law.
Yeah. You can go online. Actually, probably the city clerk's office as we speak, and get your mail-in ballot ready for the September 6th election. I get my dates confused, as well as the November election. So, if, you know, there's no a requirement for what we call excused absence, right? Absentee. If you're not available, or Lord forbid, we have an Omicron surge or whatever surge is coming, coming this fall, and there's, you know, the guys that do these, the viral study people.
Epidemiologists, yes. Yeah.
Just, you know, are projecting a tough winter time, just like the flu. It's going to be a seasonal issue. You know, you may get nervous in November to vote, but, you know, definitely get your mail-in ballot. You can only vote once because you either did a mail-in ballot or you show up, but the clerk's office have you checked off if you mailed it in, so don't show up. But we think it's still very important, as you can tell by the governor supporting these provisions, to make voting as accessible as possible. And like I said before, the city town clerk's offices are responsible for voting security and voting registration and voting availability. And time and time again, City of Quincy, with Nikki Crispo and before her, Joe Shea, has always come through to make sure that every vote is counted and nobody is mistreated at the polls.
Yeah, I spoke with her yesterday about it, and she anticipates also in-person early voting, both for the primary and for the general election, as well as the mail-in. So they are ready.
Yeah, no, they got this down to science at this point. I think that Nikki will bring this up down the road, is the challenges of getting people to work. And it's my mom used to do this for years. It is easy. I mean, it takes, you're there for a long time, it's 12 hours.
Oh yeah, it's a commitment for sure. 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. and then beyond that after the polls close, I'm sure.
Yeah, setting up and breaking down, right? So, be kind to your poll workers. Please be patient when you do vote. It's, these folks are getting paid, I think, slightly more than minimum wage right now.
It's a token reimbursement only. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and if you feel like you want to participate, you can afford a day off, and you want to be helpful during election day, definitely contact the state clerk's office about the details, associate training, and being helpful on whether primary day or election day. So, of course, we continue to need more translators. So if anybody here is bilingual, or trilingual, and you want to be a participant in the electoral process, being a poll worker is actually a big part of it.
Oh, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of that. That's a great point. Yeah, the primary, we'll see how the turnout is. It's the day after Labor Day. So see if folks extend their vacations or not.
And sadly, it's not a very exciting period. I just got breaking news. Sorry, guys, I'm actually looking at my text messages because the little thing popped up. But Sonia Chang Diaz is out.
Yes, yeah.
So literally my phone's blowing up in front of me with all this political gossip, as each text coming in is saying Sonia's out. So this is a real concern in terms of turnout, because the lack of a headline race is challenging. And those of us that have participated in many, 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 many races these days, it feels like a lifetime's worth of races. Democratic primary special open seats of any level government, would be my level or the gubernatorial level, is always a blood sport in Massachusetts. I mean, this is where you really test your mettle in terms of these races, because they tend to be vicious. They tend to be somewhat close until the very end. You're not quite sure what's going to happen. And a lot of money and manpower is put deep into these Democratic primaries statewide. With Sonia out, Maura Healey can now conserve resources for the final against whomever wins the Republican primary. But it's going to have a diminished turnout in the primary, because the lower races, which continue to be very important to everybody, should definitely go vote in these lower races, are still challenged. And I think this is going to be the first time in my lifetime I can recall a unchallenged Democratic primary opponent.
Wow.
We've seen Republicans pretty much wipe out the field early to ensure that their candidate has heavy resources into November. But normally, I'm used to getting us brutalized in terms of just raw campaign and resources. So, I'm not expecting a strong turnout. But, I know this is early to say this, but please do vote in the Democratic primary. It's still very important. And unenrolled can also vote in Democratic primary or Republican primary. You can pick one. But definitely, participate. There's still the Secretary of State's race, the auditor's race, as well as the Attorney General's race.
Right.
And, the Democratic convention, state convention, was actually pretty exciting regarding the AG's race in particular, regarding going to a second ballot.
Okay. So definitely things that will impact the future of the state to be decided upon, for sure.
Yeah, those are still very important positions in government. And, again, I encourage everybody, please do vote in your primary.
Absolutely. Also, Techie, the Supreme Court this week said it's okay to vote on the millionaire tax ballot question.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. This ballot question was rejected once before by Supreme Court because it directed the legislature to appropriate funds for specific purposes. It's actually unconstitutional for the voters by ballot. to direct the legislature to use funding in a specific manner. This time it's a little bit more flexible, where the money accomplished by the so-called millionaire's tax will be dedicated towards education transportation, but it isn't exactly a legislative mandate. It's not directing the legislature. So, but it is a committed funds in a different kind of way. How they drafted was a bit better because they're not telling us how to spend money. It is a constitutional provision of the legislatures. So the millionaire's tax, it's a little confusing because the tax rate is now 5%, a flat tax for everyone, an income tax, but it's an additional 4%.
That's right.
Onto the 5% for every single dollar after the first $1 million of income. And it's I'm trying to remember how this works. It's adjusted gross income because you're taxed on adjusted gross income.
Right, for a cost of living increases, yeah.
Yeah, so you know, after you get past the deductions, that's what you pay your taxes on.
Right, and that's the amount over every dollar of a million that would be subject to the 4% tax.
Yeah, so you know, 4 + 5 = 9. I hope. It's like, you see me do bad math. Be here. It's not like I haven't done math incorrect in my head. But yeah, you know, and the voters, we got to decide this November again. Another ballot initiative for people to decide if they think it's worth it. And again, the initiative of this funding will be dedicated towards education and transportation.
Right, subject to appropriation by the legislature, which I think is the argument that the opponents are trying to raise against this.
Yeah, but the legislature historically have followed the will, or at least the intent of the voters regarding ballot questions.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the ballot question, it doesn't quite meet the general laws in terms of it doesn't fit. And sometimes there's implementation issues that gets tweaked along the way. Marijuana, against the example we use, we had three different ballot initiatives for marijuana, from decriminalization to medical, and now flu-blown recreational use. And the legislature's had to keep adjusting these laws as real life happens.
Mm-hmm.
The wonderful ideas are put forward and the voters approve it, but the voters don't actually deal with the real life, like stuff happens that voters didn't probably intend bad things to happen. So we have to figure out how to deal with it, so it's, safely distributed and ensure there's, proper access and things like that. So, essentially you got your recreational marijuana. We just made sure that it was safe and properly regulated so you can get your access to it. And the market will grow, and the market grow, the price will go down as market grows. So, we passed this in the House, that's sitting in the Senate, more ways to grow the industry equitably, especially since they can't get access to conventional banking to start these type of businesses. And hopefully by encouraging more business development in this area, the price of marijuana will go down.
Yep, there's a dispensary set to open at the Four River Rotary in Quincy in the not too distant future. So they're definitely starting.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully, price competition will address a lot of issues currently, whether it be recreational marijuana or you're just looking for CBD oils, the non-high component, I think is the way.
Non-mind altering, yes.
Yeah, which, well, I had a friend with pancreatic cancer who died, and, towards the end of his life, the CBD oils really made a huge difference in quality of life, especially trying not to be on morphine.
Yeah.
And, it was a tough last 3 months, but, he was much more aware, cognizant, less, nausea, better appetite, and, you want better quality of life as you come from the end of it. So, I used to be very skeptical about things like CBD oils, but, it's not for everyone. I'm not saying it is, but, when you see it actually helps someone that you love, it makes a difference.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Seeing as we're on the topic of taxes, Taki, I know we've talked about this before, but it's back in the discussion again about suspending the both federal and state gas taxes. I know something that you've been skeptical of in the past.
Yeah, Connecticut did pass theirs, and guess what? They can't implement it. They're still trying to figure out what to do. They run across, I think, the problem we've discussed before, and it's all level. The gas tax is like the excise taxes. it's something as soon as it crosses the border, we collect. It's not collected at the pump. Your gas station is not collecting excise tax and give it to us. So there's no guarantee that there'll be any savings. And given the rising amount of gas, I'm going to tell you, you won't even notice that the gas tax was reduced. You just won't see it, because if you drop it 18 cents, it's $5 right now, let's say. We drop the 18 cents or 24 cents, and the thing spikes to 570. You won't most, I'll be honest about it. No one's going to say, oh, yeah, we noticed the savings. Of course not. We went to 570. And that's not an unrealistic number I'm putting out there, by the way.
No, it's over six in California right now. Yeah,
exactly. We could be looking at a Labor Day, you know, closing at $7. So, I mean, that's a big part of it. And you know, the congressional delegations as well as the state delegations have the same concern. You know, how do we know the savings actually passed along to the consumer? We collect our excise taxes. We can confirm to you that, you know, we have received them for that. Secondly, you know, bondholders don't like instability of getting paid. I mean, name you. I don't think any of you guys listening likes it when your bank, you know, you hear from your bank, you know, you can't pay the bank your loans. So, you know, assuring bondholders that revenue be there after the sunset or 3 months or whatever. The legislature doesn't have to follow those sunsets. It can decide to continue indefinitely, which causes bondholders panic. And the interest rates are up, which means our bonds are going to be up too. So, and they have no trust in the government to pay their debt. This is going to just jack up interest rates. And right. we still got roads and bridges and other capital improvements that we're always doing at our level. It doesn't stop. We want the best rate. So it's a little complex in the sense that, and I said this before, did this on Bloomberg Radio. It's like, you got to pay for it eventually. So, I mean, do you want voter anger when you're forced to find new ways to pay bondholders at now a higher interest rate down the road? And you can get angry at us for doing that, you know, or do you think we should just stay the course and ensure that we're not forced to spike against taxpayers later on to make up losses from today? And say, well, you can use surplus money. Yeah, but surplus is temporary. And the bondholders know it's temporary. And you know, they can still spike our interest rate because the feds have risen it. They can jack it up even more because though it's one-time money. And when you hear the one-time money and I have like $100, but I owe you $1,000, I'm going to put over $100 and I don't have any more for you for a while.
Yeah. I see.
It doesn't inspire confidence, right? In person you owe money to. Yeah. So I understand people's frustration. Obviously, I share in that frustration like everybody else regarding higher gas prices and electric prices and natural gas prices and heating oil, which hopefully this will be a warm enough summer. We don't have to use heating oil or gas for heating. At the same time, though, people won't remember that, you know, we lower the gas tax and then we have to pay the piper later. And you're going to be mad I'm paying the piper later.
The speaker and the Senate president both acknowledged that some type of relief is needed. Do you have any insight as to what they might be working on other than the gas tax holiday?
Well, we're sharing information among the you know, legislatures, sharing information to Mark Cusack in the House, which is the House Chair of Revenue. Used to be taxation guys in the old days, but, you know, semantics of language, right? And, you know, I've been sharing ideas of Mark, and I've shared my ideas as well. And, you know, other than the fact we, you know, want to change the state tax that the deduction of the first $1 million includes the $1 million deduction component. There's a whole issue about how much of your state tax is deducted from taxes, the state taxes, and how that if you cross a million, you don't get any estate tax assistance. We want to create some equity and line it up with the federal government's estate tax, which makes a lot more sense. But at the same time, though, I mean, we're looking for ways to actually put, you know, money in the hands of those who really need the money, not those who have plenty of money. We're talking like the mega millionaires, right? And there are some mega millionaires in Massachusetts. I'm pretty confident everyone knows that. So, you know, we're looking at things that earn income tax credit again, right? Mm-hmm. You know, there's child care assistance issues, and there's rental assistance issues. You know, there's all kinds of other ways that we could help in the existing tax structure to help folks on day-to-day issues. And the question becomes, is whether we do like new credits or bring back old credits that we've had in the past temporarily, things like, you know, electric vehicle, hybrid vehicle tax credit. We used to do those in the past, right? So do we want to go down that right to try to stimulate another part of our economy that's already really, really hot, which is kind of really a funny statement I make. We want to stimulate the economy, but we're overheating right now. It's really kind of a bizarre statement.
I know the Fed's trying to get people stop buying houses and cars. I know, yeah.
I know, it's very, as you can see, this policy is kind of an interesting quandary, right? You know, right. We have a very hot economy, but we're going to create more stimulus. It's like,
yeah, it's the whole supply and demand, you know, game, basically.
Exactly. So, you know, I think a lot of stuff's on the table. I think it's really targeted towards people who need it the most. And, you know, will be a visible difference on tax day. And the speaker's correct. You know, you won't see this tax implementation to the next tax cycle, many of this stuff. So, you know, you can get it under current tax cycle we're in, but a lot of the big benefits you probably won't see until like the 2023 tax cycle. That's when it really comes, like everything comes, you know, becomes really like concrete and how it works. And these are going to be likely, I think many of these will be likely permanent tax assistance. And okay. Maybe there'll be some tax credits or not. I can't tell you if there will be, but often a lot of tax credits can be temporary again, because we're trying to create economic stimulus in certain sectors.
Yeah. Okay. So there's no easy answer, basically.
No, absolutely. And, you know, and I have serious concerns about, you know, obviously we talked about interest rates earlier, but we've seen the market tank. We're deep in the bear market now. Yep. There's no doubt about it. And the spikes are tiny in terms of growth, but the spikes are not offsetting the drops in the market. You can feel your 401k, your private investments. You know, if you're going to retire at the end of last year, obviously you made a great decision moving your money to safe havens. But I mean, those of us who are a little younger here are watching our retirement funds bounce all over the board. And those who invest in the private market, you know, get paid dividend tax. They're not going to pay as much at the end of the cycle, and if you know, the 2022 taxes. So, you know, I fully expect the fact that we have insufficient housing to meet demand on sales. We reach that point where there's just not enough inventory despite the interest rates, plus, you know, dropping markets. I don't see a huge market recovery this year. You know, we have a really shortfall on capital gains. And I think when we do the December revenue consensus numbers between the Ways and Means Committees and Administration and Finance, I know Baker's leaving at the end of the year, but I mean, ANF will still do their jobs. The Administration Finance, I think they're going to project very small growth on capital gains, and it won't offset rising wages income tax, because I know people are getting paid higher wages as part of inflation. But I don't think the wage is going to be high enough to offset the massive amount of capital gains loss.
Okay. So some hard times ahead, or at least uncertain times ahead for sure.
But it will be uncertain times. Yeah. And this global geopolitical stuff, you know, actually impacts us. As we learned throughout COVID, you know, we don't live in a little bubble. I mean, we're all connected to everybody in the world. You know, those impacts can be continually felt at home. So, you know, we wisely held back spending all our ARPA money. We have to end of next year to spend it. Excuse me. We are looking at some kind of surplus, but the numbers keep bouncing around depending who you ask how much surplus, you know, from FY22. So we're seeing what's there. The rainy day fund is strong, but it's, you know, again, like, you know, we have a lot of uncertainty where this market goes, and we hope for no recession. Or if it's going to be a recession, it'll be a very short recession.
Right.
But I mean, unemployment numbers may go back up again, or it could be a very odd recession where unemployment numbers won't go up that high because of labor shortages.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very uncertain, very strange period when they're talking about recession during a very low unemployment market. You know, generally, again, low unemployment means it's the employees dictate the terms of salary because there's labor shortage. You need to create incentives for people to come work for you because they can get a better job someplace else.
Right. Yeah. It's this whole term. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, no, it's very weird because, I mean, those of us who live through recessions in government, you know, watch these things closely. You know, I'm used to seeing like 8% unemployment tied to a recession.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole economic turmoil is different because it was artificially induced by a pandemic. You know, it didn't occur naturally within the economy. It was the pandemic that triggered everything.
Yeah, the federal government poured like an insane amount of money to a lot of major corporations. Some of that money also trickled down to small businesses. I'm not saying it helped every industry sector. The hotel industry is still having a hard time. Travel agents are having a hard time. It's not every sector benefit from. I do understand that. The trickle down didn't trickle down because trickle down doesn't really work. However, that being said, you know, we gave a couple of big rounds of stimulus checks to everyone, like over $2,000's worth. You know, $2,000's not that much money in Boston because of cost of living, but if you're living in a low cost like Tulsa, for example, you know, $2,000 goes a long way.
Yeah, it might pay your real estate taxes for the year. You know, you don't know. Yeah,
absolutely. If you live in a lower cost of living area, a couple of grand goes a real long way. And that's non-taxable income. Mm-hmm. Stimulus checks were non-taxable. And then we also give tax relief on unemployment benefits and no tax on PPP. So, you know, the legislature left a lot of money on the table because, you know, continue to try to improve stimulus, make sure you keep your hands on your money so you can spend your money. And people saved a lot of money during the pandemic. And once pandemic ended, people started spending money on things like home improvements. You know, the cost of wood went up because everybody's trying to get, you know, things done because they weren't on vacation to build pools and fire pits and, you know, other home improvements to enjoy vacation at home. Those are good for you. And for people, you know, people behave like me. I just hoard money because I'm afraid of the future. I don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, my father taught me this. I mean, if you're not sure, you're better off holding on to your dollars and keep a little cash at the house just in case, you know, there's a blackout or something. I mean, not like a lot of cash, but, you know.
No, I understand. I understand what you mean. Yeah, it's two different mindsets when it comes to money.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, practice a lot of things my dad taught me still. Sure. But it's, you know, it's a very new situation. Now we have the infrastructure bond bill. We're doing the T-bond, transportation bond today, which is going to be used to leverage the federal infrastructure money that's going to be given over a decade. Again, those are jobs. Mm-hmm. It helps keep the economy floating, right? So international travel is opening up because we're no longer requiring testing requirements for people coming in from overseas. That should stimulate more travel. However, the U.S. dollar is very strong globally, which may deter travel at some level. People don't realize a strong dollar is good until you have to actually get to the U.S. and you have a weak currency against the U.S. dollar.
Yeah, if your euro is only worth, you know, 50 cents here, then, yeah, you're not going to go very far.
I think a euro is like 90 cents, 98 cents to the dollar. Normally, euro is like $1.20 plus.
Right.
Yep. Euro is very strong currency. So, you know, and also input affects our imports because of the strong dollar. It affects how we export import because people pay in U.S. dollars. So goods moving back and forth to the U.S. With an overly strong U.S. dollar impacts the prices we pay. It also impacts the prices other people pay for our stuff.
Right.
Yep. Which then contributes to global inflation. And we're still the biggest, you know, per capita importer exporter on the planet in terms of per capita. And we are the richest ones on the planet per capita. Hmm. By far none.
You mentioned the T. Why don't we go there, Tacky, and talk about the federal review of safety issues at the T. And I know the House leadership wants to hold the administration at bay for this.
Well, I mean, Governor Baker wanted to basically put the T in receivership. And we said, okay. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Basically what he did was put it in receivership and gave it to the governor. He appointed the temporary board and we extended it for 2 more years past, you know, the 3-year time limit. And, you know, then restored the advisory committees and the MBT board and so forth to its prior structure.
Yeah, the Quincy mayor is the chairman, actually.
Yeah. And, you know, we're all about infrastructure issues, and it's true that he has spent well into a few billion dollars in infrastructure improvements under T, and, you know, it is visible. And we talk about these new train cars for years regarding the Red Line and the Orange Line, which are arriving, despite the fact there's so many problems with these cars.
Yeah.
So I think one of the issues that I've had to deal with, again, I think you guys don't know what I deal with regarding some issues is T staffing. I remember when Marty Walsh was still a state rep, and then we went to, you know, MBTA when under Deval Patrick administration, arguing against staffing reductions as they moved to Charlie Card out of, you know, more Charlie Card-ish automation. They didn't feel the need to keep the guy in the fourth car anymore. I think people remember the fourth car. He used to sit in the fourth car because it's a safe car, because you know where the attendant was. And you know, supposed to have roaming people on platforms being assistants, supposed sitting in, you know, a toll booth. You're not going to have anybody in a toll because they're not paying the money anymore. Everything's trying to transfer on Charlie cards. Right. So, I mean, you know, the T challenge pre-COVID has been maximum capacity. So they can't, they have very small customer growth, but rising costs of doing business. And one of the solutions back in the Deval Patrick administration was to cut staff, repurpose staff. And you know, this kept, you know, this was an impending situation right to the Baker administration. There was no staff expansion, it was continued attrition. And my criticism continues to be, and hopefully oversight here will reveal, it's a very management heavy and very management heavy agency. It's more management than workers. And you know, it's eventually this was going to come home to roost. Joe Vernacchi actually has an interesting article in the Globe I read last evening about why aren't people holding the manufacturer assembly plant in Springfield, the Chinese company, to a more accountability about how come this battery exploded on an Orange Line vehicle? How come the Red Line cars aren't quite fitting on the rails correctly? I mean, you know, they were the lowest bidder. And, you know, these, you know, about what, about, it was not even a $600 million bid, right? It was a low bid by, you know, well over $200 million from the next bidder.
Yep.
To get a huge contract to do this work. And I know everyone on the call here, you know, everyone watching wants to get the best savings, but you also want quality for your savings. So it'd be interesting if the Transportation Committee pursues not just the administration regarding how they've been handling the T, and you know, how come they can't properly manage the employee and staffing beyond just infrastructure, because apparently the T folks thought infrastructure would solve everything. I mean, clearly you need people to work.
Right.
Same time, what's going on these cars that come, you know, improperly assembled?
Yep. It's a lot to look into for sure. And it's not going to be tomorrow that it gets fixed either.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you know, we're very concerned, you know, obviously regarding the safety of the T. But, you know, could some of this stuff been prevented if you had proper staffing and you had better eyes, you know, in the stations, in the train cars that historically was there, for those of us who remember it. You know, improve safety. I mean, even just, you know, criminal issues, you know, I've heard anecdotal stories about, you know, Asian harassment at MBT stations, but there's nobody to be seen. Mm-hmm. And the MBT police force, you know, it's a lot of people, but they can't cover every square space. Yep. So, you know, having a physical presence of staff employees, MBT staff employees, you know, on platform visible, you know, also provides a degree of safety.
Mm-hmm.
I think this was the only metro system I can think of that really didn't try to heighten their security, you know, during Asian racism, because apparently it's fun to throw Asians on the train tracks, you know, which is enormously disturbing.
On that happy note, Jackie, why don't we let folks know how to get a hold of you?
Well, we're at 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. You know, push a button, get somebody, we'll get to you. You know, obviously my email still works at tacky.chan@amahouse.gov, but I'm now drowning in not just end of year push or not push bills, depending on which side of constituency you're on initially, because I do hear from both sides in droves, not just one side. People seem to think I only hear from one side of an argument. I'm getting both in droves, right? And also taking a lot of testimony in the conference committee on and winning climate change. So I'm getting a lot of testimony as a member of this conference committee right now. And, you know, State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook page. You all know I love putting information up there as well as at Tacky Chan Twitter. And, of course, tackychan.org. Excuse me, tackychan.org. I looked at the website. Yeah, I got to do some updating. Okay, I know. There's a lot of updating I need to get done.
Okay, but the summer project.
It is definitely the summer project. But, you know, again, we prioritize constituent service stuff, particularly constituent service issues inside our purview. We do get some city issues. People not realize we do get city issues. We will refer to the appropriate city councilor and the mayor's office or, you know, city departments, as the case may be. But, I mean, we try to get to people with those problems that are pressing first.
Sure. All righty. Good to talk to you. Appreciate it. I know you've got a little bit of allergy infection thing going on, so we'll give you a break.
Yeah, it's every gift for a politician to lose their voice, the deeper they go.
We're almost there. Hold on for another month, Tacky, and you'll be good to go.
So, okay, Joe, we'll catch you again in a week's time.
Sounds good. All right. Thanks very much. Be well.
Be well.